It's a Wednesday, and therefore we bring you a masterclass. And this masterclass is brought to you by KLM Empowered, your first choice in growing greatness through the fourth industrial revolution. Visit klmempowered.com. And this hour's masterclass is dedicated to resilience. We've got the team from the Resilience Factory joining us now. And one of them is a woman who's no stranger, of course, to you. She has been a voice on the station telling the story of her family and her daughter. And she was also on the show a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the launch of her book, The Jenna Lowe Story. And so she joins us now, Gabby Lowe, the mother of Jenna Lowe. And since, of course, the diagnosis of her daughter's pulmonary hypertension, the campaign that they went on to get a transplant, a lung transplant for Jenna, a lot has happened. And she herself has undergone a transformation. And that transformation has involved becoming a life coach and a mentor. And in this process, she has founded the Coaching Nest and the Resilience Factory with her partner, Pippa, who is also here. Pippa Shaper, her career started back in the UK. She came here to South Africa and founded, she's the co-founder of Home from Home, which is a child protection organization. And she's also a trustee of several other international NPOs. But together, they've been doing work around this question, this topic of resilience. Good afternoon, ladies. Good afternoon. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. So the last time we spoke, Gabby, was when you were up here, you were on a book tour.
Yes.
You had your hands full, of course, sharing more about this incredible book that you've written.
Yes. Get Me to 21.
Yes. Yes. And we were just talking off air about how massive a book and how generous you were in writing it, about, you know, giving more of yourself, telling more about your family, and of course, telling us more about your daughter, Jenna.
Yeah, it's also been very therapeutic for me.
Yeah.
An incredibly therapeutic thing to do, albeit difficult.
Yeah.
And the book has been fantastically successful, I'm delighted to tell you.
So along the way, how did resilience become a topic of interest for you?
So that's an interesting question, because of course Jenna's journey with her illness was a long one. Mm. And there were 6 very difficult years that got increasingly more and more difficult. And so when Jen passed away, which was 2015, I have to be honest, I didn't know how I was going to survive that. Or in fact, I didn't think I would survive it.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, of course, we do. We do. We can survive incredible trauma, yeah, as human beings, and challenge. And I didn't want to go back to marketing, so I went and studied. I did an 18-month diploma in integral life coaching. And right from the beginning of that journey, I started to realize, hold on, we have been employing characteristics of resilience for years as a family. And slowly it became a topic of great interest to me, because if you look around you, it's interesting to see that some people thrive and some people really just don't cope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the context of South Africa, even, we need resilience just for everyday life. You know, life is tough.
Yeah.
So it just became a topic that I was more and more interested in. And then I met this amazing woman, Pippa.
Yes.
I went to a yoga class and we met on a yoga mat, different yoga mats. And not the same one. And she has had a litany of loss in her life. And the two of us really started to compare notes. She reached out to me as a peer to support me.
Mm.
And we've developed this friendship and this partnership now in the Resilience Factory. And we've co-authored a model on authentic emotional resilience.
Yeah. So, Pippa, how did resilience become a topic for you?
Well, if you'd asked me about what resilience was for my childhood, my 20s, I wouldn't have been able to probably answer you, because my life had been really quite rosy. Nothing had gone wrong. I moved to South Africa in 1992. And when my first daughter, my second child, was born in 92, she was born with a rare genetic disorder. So right from the beginning, we knew that suddenly there was something wrong with her, which would put her into a life of surgery. She had her first operation at 3 days old, and she's gone on to have 22 surgeries since then, facing near death on several occasions during that time. I went on to have another few children. I had 4 children. And then one extraordinary day about 20 years ago, my third child, Lucy, age 4, came home from school with a bit of tummy ache on a Friday afternoon. And she was dead by Sunday lunchtime. absolutely out of nowhere. A perfectly well child. So that I went first of all into that, why? What has happened? And how do you cope?
Yeah.
And how am I going to get through this? And we relied on, as we said at that time, it was about family, friends and faith that we relied on at that time. 4 years later, my husband got sick. He was diagnosed with cancer. He died a few months later, leaving me a widow with three children aged 12, 11 and 5. Mm. I was very fortunate to get married again. And then I was kind of getting back to some kind of a normality.
Yeah.
My sister died shortly after my husband died. I got back to kind of a normality. And then 4.5 years ago, on a beautiful summer's day, just when everything was going brilliantly again, my eldest son, Jack, age 24, was killed in a car accident.
Oh, Pippa.
So the loss has been, you know, just sort of one on top of another.
Yes, yes.
And yet, the question I've been asked most through my life is, how have you coped?
Mm. Mm.
And followed up by the people saying, I couldn't have coped. So that started me looking at the question of, well, how have I coped? Yes, it's about family, friends and faith, that there's more to that. And all of those different things came into the subject of under the heading of resilience, so many factors.
Yeah.
And so when I obviously knew of Jenna's story, we were in the same kind of circles in Cape Town. And so we met, 3 months after Jenna had died, 6 months after Jack had died. And I went over and said, I think we need to have lunch. We started having lunch. Gabby had trained to be a coach. I had also trained to be a coach. So our lives were coming parallel like that. Mm-hmm. And after about 2 years of lunches, we had a conversation, a very memorable conversation. Gabby said, you know, I'm doing a lot more work about looking about resilience. And I went, that's funny, so am I. And we just went, okay, let's do this together.
Great, yeah. Fantastic. So what's interesting about both your stories is that you were doing it already.
Yeah.
That you were resilient and going through life and dealing with everyday life's problems and resilience showing up every day to carry you through. And I think, as you had said earlier on, Gabby, that this is what we live in, a really tough world. Whether you're in South Africa, whether you're in Angola or Mozambique or Nigeria or in New York or in Syria, you have to be resilient. So in your view, why has it become important to teach resilience? Because when you look around, we see examples of so many of us doing it and getting through life in a resilient way.
Mm. But there is also a lot of evidence to show that the Generation Z, which is from 1995 onwards, are not resilient.
Yeah.
And that's what the evidence is showing, that they are not learning how to cope. And who knows what the reasons are for that. I think there are myriads of reasons for that. But through our coaching, because both of us coach individual people as well, we are seeing a massive trend towards lack of resilience and a huge sense of isolation and depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And that is running through as a theme, running through for the youth. And so I think it is important to teach the tools of authentic resilience. And when I say authentic resilience, we very strong on that term, because there's resilience where you simply put on a suit and armor and you push through regardless.
Yes, yes.
That is not resilience.
But you're absolutely inside, you're shattered.
This
is just
correct.
A veneer of holding it together for the rest of the
correct.
World. But inside, you know, your cells are
resilience.
Encoding the wrong things.
Exactly.
Encoding the trauma.
Exactly.
The suppressed trauma.
And long term, that is not going to be resilient.
Exactly.
You're going to fall apart at some stage.
Mm.
Authentic resilience, we feel very strongly, is something that comes from within. And that we need to teach people the tools of how to cultivate that. How do you cultivate that authentic resilience from inside? And there are lots of things that need to be taken into account.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you raise the youth of today, because there are a number of concerning... I remember Simon Sinek talking about, you know, the famous video where he talks about connection.
Mm.
Yeah,
and 100%.
Yeah, and why when we fail to create community, when we fail to have these meaningful connections, what happens to the individuals, and how perhaps when they... And I don't know, maybe this is just anecdotal or an uninformed little piece of philosophy, but life is struggle. And we have said for a long time that you should be aiming to get your pieces right, so you can have an idyllic life. But that's not reality.
No.
So it's almost as if we need to separate ourselves from the belief that things are meant to be perfect and no disruptions, there are no potholes along the way. We need to divorce ourselves from that and embrace the idea that life is challenging. It's going
difficult.
To be a fight. Mm.
Absolutely. And I think you are spot on. It's not anecdotal. That is, we're selling our kids a lie. Life is not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. And we set ourselves up for suffering because of our expectations that there will be no loss and no disappointment. Whereas in actual fact, every day brings loss and disappointment.
Yeah.
How do you cope with it? That's what matters. Mm. How do you respond to that?
Mm. We also look about how things have changed. You know, you hear my story and think, I've lost 2 out of 4 children and I've lost a husband. And it sounds appalling.
Mm.
Go back 100 years, 1919, the year when after the First World War ended. For a mother to have lost 2 out of her 4 children and to have lost her husband and would have been absolutely normal.
Mm.
So we've changed our... You know, things have changed so much, thanks to medical intervention, etc., where we don't expect children to die, for example. We don't expect hardship to happen. And we've kind of built up our levels of how life should be.
Yeah.
And so when something happens, which is, is devastating, so we can't accept it. You know, and the question, how can this happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've lost touch with death.
Which is inevitable.
Which is inevitable.
It's the only thing we know for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Precisely. Is that we're all going to die.
Like taxes.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the heart of resilience, authentic resilience. Perhaps you have your own observations, your own experiences to share about how you've managed to be resilient through some of the toughest times. I mean, we have mass retrenchments happening in this country. People have to be resilient through all of that. We have losses every day, people dying on our roads through fatalities. And the other day we were talking about the fact that we shouldn't call them accidents. Mm. It's crashes and collisions that happen on our roads. And so there is a lot. There is certainly a lot. We have high levels of gender-based violence. For you to wake up every day and have a semblance of a life requires a lot of resilience. But how do we do that from a place that allows us to move forward as healthily as possible? And that's what we'll dig into after the break. My guests are the team from the Resilience Factory. That's Gabby Lowe, mother of Jenna Lowe. And we also have her partner, Pippa Shaper. Your calls, 011-883-0702 and 31702 for your SMSs. Your WhatsApps on 072-702-1702 for today's Masterclass.
702 Masterclass.
It's 24 minutes past 2 and we continue our conversation about authentic resilience. And so you drew from your own experience. You looked at, you created from your experience, of course, these pillars that we could take out to learn from and almost craft a model of or for resilience. Take me through that process and what's in the model.
Absolutely. So we've taken it down to 10 R's, not hours, R's, the 10 R's of authentic resilience, because then it's something, yes, exactly,
yeah.
Then it's something you can hold on to remember. The first 5 R's we teach in a way that you need to learn them in order, so that when there's a crisis, you can go, okay, what's the reality? What do I need to do next? I need to reach in. What's my responsibility? And I'll explain them to you. Mm-hmm. So the first R talks about reality, and the reason being that we automatically as human beings so simply and quickly go into either drama, absolute catastrophization or something, or denial.
Mm-hmm.
Our psyche loves to avoid because it's painful to protect us. So yes, and yes, there's such a thing as healthy defense mechanisms. But when you're in crisis, you need to find a way to stay somewhere in the middle, which is around realistic optimism. How do I stick with the facts? Really stick with what's going on here.
Yeah.
So for instance, as an example, when I was told, no, there's none of that medication that Jenna needs is available in the country. If I had just accepted that or gone into complete drama, I would never have extended her life. But to say, okay, wait, hold on. What are the real facts here?
Mm-hmm.
What actually is the truth? The truth was, well, it's a challenge. It's difficult, but it can be done. And actually, if you think about it, in just about every single situation, We don't stick with the facts. Our opinions, our beliefs, our assumptions come flooding in so fast that before we know it, we've built a story about the future when we haven't even looked at the facts.
Yeah.
So the first R is about what's the reality? What are you really, really dealing with?
No, you're lucky to have, when that kind of situation happens, to have someone in the room who will kind of divert the conversation to that. So you're saying, have in your mind that person in the room who will say, whoa, 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 stop with the melodrama. Let's look at the facts.
Exactly.
Let's not collapse in a heap and panic. Let's look at the facts. So have that voice in your head that does
100%.
That.
And you can learn that. That's a skill that you can learn. Mm-hmm. And we use a whole lot of tools in our workshop to teach people that skill.
So what did you mean by reach in? I'm thinking it sounds like it could rhyme with Sheryl Sandberg's lean in. So reach in.
Well, this was a particularly hard one for me. I think I put it down to being British. It was about connecting with my emotions and really accepting those head on. And again, I think we tend to often come to a place which is between either denial of our emotions, which is just, okay, I can't deal with it, too much, too hectic. I feel that if I start looking at my emotions, I'm going to just collapse. If I start crying, I'll never stop crying. So you know what? Much safer. Push them all away. Let's just stick them away in a cupboard and then they're not going to be bothering us.
No, we numb. I find that as people, we have to cope, so therefore we numb. And you could look at all sorts of numbing agents. Met a colleague downstairs who was like, oh, it's been so stressful, but I'm glad I can go out and smoke because that helps me deal with the stress.
It's numbing.
Yeah, it's numbing.
And it's numbing. And we talk about that later in our model when we talk about number eight, which is about renewal. The really important thing there is around self-care. So we do all these lovely things we say are self-care, and we do, but self-care can turn quite quickly into numbing. So you know, having a glass of wine with a girlfriend on a Friday evening is self-care. It's looking after ourselves. When it becomes having a bottle of wine on your own every night, that's numbing.
Right
So we really have to tread that line between where we're really caring for ourselves. Anything that you can do, which is self-care, exercise, can also be used as numbing. And in the words of Brené Brown, whose work we absolutely love, you know, she says, the truth is that if you can't numb selectively, if you numb the pain, if you numb the vulnerabilities, you numb the grief, you numb the pleasure, you numb the joy, you numb
everything
else as well.
Yes, the sincerity, the ability to be in this moment. Yeah. She's spot on.
So to go back to, you know, the number two, which is about reaching in, that's about really being able to sit with your emotions, not become overwhelmed by them, not to drown in them, but it's about reaching in and knowing what your emotions are and also knowing who you are as well.
Yeah. Responsibility.
Yeah, so that's about always having the choice as to how to respond. And it's difficult to get your head around that because a lot of things are going to happen in your life in which you have no choice, be it that accident, be it your husband getting cancer, be it some hectic thing happening that you didn't choose.
Losing your job.
Losing your child, losing your job, getting a divorce might not always be your choice. But where you always have a choice is, how do I respond to that? You always have that choice. So we talk about, authentically resilient people take responsibility for their own emotional well-being. That's what they do, not put that responsibility on somebody else. And part of that is about knowing that you always have a choice as to how to respond. How do you put a space between the event, between the thing that's happening to you and how you respond to it? And that's really a very, very critical skill in terms of building a capacity for resilience. Is being able to not react instantaneously, but to sit with something, to think it through, and to choose how to respond.
Because you do have options on how to respond. That's interesting, because remember in a breathwork workshop, the point was made that your trauma, the hurt that you've been through, you may not have had a hand in it, or you may not have had a say or control over it, but you certainly have a say in your healing. You know, there is control, or you can inform your healing. So I thought that was incredibly powerful, so that you are not just a victim of circumstance, but that there is, you can take charge and be responsible for your healing.
And it's not only powerful, it's true.
Yeah.
absolutely true. Yes.
So let's take your calls. First, we bring you the headlines. We've got EWN with Ayanda Nyathi coming up and a break, but we're taking your calls as well. Resilience. How have you built resilience? When you look at the younger children, the youth in your life, how do you make sure that they are resilient? Because I saw that universities, not just in the US, but even here, I recall a report, Being Black at University, that was the title. It noted that there was a lot of mental health issues that were surfacing in university students. Much of it had to do with things like depression and anxiety, panic attacks, and so on. So a variety of disorders, in fact, emerging during that time. And it's not just here, but also in other parts of the world. And universities have noted that students are battling for a number of reasons and with a number of issues, perhaps some of them pertain to their performance, and C's and B's are seen as failure and they don't know how to deal with that. So even the level of expectation that they have of themselves is one where they often need to be given perspective. And so it's affecting the universities because they're afraid to mark or give students poor results out of concern of how they may react to those poor results. So there are lots of areas. You can even perhaps look in the workplace. There's a young woman that I used to mentor who was always so dramatic about criticism that she received in the workplace. She was 24 years old and attempts to kind of coach and guide and correct when she had gone wrong by her boss were interpreted as this absolute disaster. And trying to give perspective and help in that case would often be quite frustrating because I'd be like, it's an opportunity for you to grow and empower yourself. And so are we living in a time where society is not as resilient as it once was? And is that also the correct way to approach the crisis that we are seeing? I wonder. There are just so many questions, but also so many examples around us that say we do need to teach our children resilience. And we also have to remember how to remain resilient through all sorts of life's challenging moments.
702 Masterclass.
It is now 23 minutes to 3 o'clock, rather, and we're talking about resilience this afternoon. Just been looking at quiz questions that you would have to answer, you know, as part of some of the workshops hosted by the Resilience Factory, who are my guests this afternoon. Things like you have to answer a question on a scale of 1 to 5. I feel like my life has little or no meaning and purpose. How would you answer that in this moment? I'm quickly aware of my own emotions when they occur and I can name them easily. One says it's not easy for me to ask for or accept help from others. So it's a 30-strong list of questions. What does that help us with?
That's just to get, it's a fun quiz to get kind of a handle on how resilient are you at the moment.
Okay.
And it's something we use in the handbook just so that you can get a radar of where you're at. But the point is that none of us really, I mean, we could all do with more resilience because life just keeps happening, doesn't it? So we're never really resilient enough. And it's a capacity you can keep on learning.
Right.
It's a skill that you can actually develop.
Yes. Well, some of the tools or the model included, as you said, responsibility, reaching out, a question about how hard is it for you to get help from others? And then the last, number 5, is robust revolutionary thinking. What is that about? Sounds exciting.
It is exciting, and I'll hand over to Pippa, but what that's really about is that in times of crisis and trauma, we tend to shut down, obviously, because we're very stressed. And to really be resilient, you need to find ways to access creative thinking, innovative thinking, even in times of trauma.
Yeah.
So we have come up with nice models, things you can do to help you with that.
So the first thing about robust revolutionary thinking, when you, in times of crisis, we shut down, we, you know, that sort of deer in the headlights thing that you get, you just can't think creatively. And the first thing to know is to know about what your own strengths are. So to know what you've got to fall back on in hard times. And it's amazing when you say to people, what are you strong at? What are you really good at? What are you talented? People find it very hard to actually put into words what they are. Yeah. Ask them what they're rubbish at. Their hands will go straight up.
A day-long list.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we really help people start to identify their strengths, be able to say, yeah, you know what, actually in a time of a crisis, I'm a really good listener, or I'm a really practical person, or I'm really good at strategic thinking, big picture thinking, and get people to start thinking about what their strengths are.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do that, you then quickly know that actually you can't be brilliant at absolutely everything. And you have to reach out to other people as well to find out, to come in with the gaps, to know about where they're really good at things as well. So an example for me was when Hal, my husband, died, my daughter had to have the most serious of her operations. And we suddenly realized that she wasn't able to have the National Health Service treatment in the UK that she was having anymore. And all of a sudden, that's it. That possibility had closed down. She needed massive surgery done and she couldn't have it done.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to reach on one of my strengths, which is being a networker.
Right.
And so I could reach into my strength of networking to be able to go outside of myself to say, where else can I go to for help? And then reach into other people's strengths and talents. So one of the things that we come up with is a model in that called about your board of advisors, about who your board of advisors are.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a board of advisors?
Yes. So companies have a board of advisors, obviously, about telling them about the technical stuff. But the fantastic thing is individuals, we can have our own board of advisors who got something people like to have a strategic thinker on your board of advisors, to have an influencer, to have somebody who's logical and pragmatic, a nurturer, a peer, somebody who's been there before, and the professionals you need. And it's an amazing thing that when you go away from a workshop where people go and say, what's been the most thing that's impacted you today? So many people go, I am going to go and form my board of advisors and actually go and ask people to be on my board.
Your counsel. You know, during those times of crisis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And perhaps already you have one that you've created without even realizing it, but it could be strengthened and you think, okay, it's only family. What about someone from outside or someone,
maybe
as you say, professional,
mm-hmm.
exactly, that accountant, lawyer, whatever it may be. And one other thing, while we are in this neighborhood, that I think is often, when it comes to what you've just said now and some of the questions, reflecting on them, why is reaching out so important? Why leaning on other people a mark of resilience, or an enabler of and a reinforcement of resilience?
We are wired for connection.
Mm.
As human beings, we're wired for connection. We cannot go it alone.
But we're living in a world where we're increasingly becoming individualistic, even with communal societies like ours has been historically. We're moving away from that and leaving behind that community.
Leaving the village.
Yeah.
Which is giving us a sense of isolation.
Exactly.
And being isolated undermines your ability to be resilient,
mm-hmm.
authentically, emotionally resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling like you have a sense of belonging strengthens your ability to be emotionally resilient.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely vital to learn how to reach out. And what we always forget is that giving and receiving are a virtuous circle.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah.
And we forget that. We think that asking for help is about being needy.
Because so many of us are comfortable with giving.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And when it's
yeah.
our turn to receive, we don't tell people, we don't disclose that we're in need, that we're in distress.
Mm.
We try and handle it on our own. And yet we do rush to the rescue and to the side of other people. So as you say, it is a virtuous circle.
It is a virtuous circle.
Yeah.
And if you think about what you just said now, so many of us don't ask for what we need. How resilient is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
If you're locking yourself away with your troubles and you're trying to cope just on your own, at the end of the day, we live in community. Mm. We are one. We live in community.
Hence the authentic.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, and going, just talking about the authentic resilience bit, when you talk to people about what resilience is, very often people will talk to you about this thing about bouncing back.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of like, resilience is about being able to bounce back from, believe me, when you've been through unbelievable trauma, losing a child, getting a cancer diagnosis, there ain't no bouncing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bouncing around it. And the truth is, we never go back to where we were. We never unsee the things we've seen. We never unexperience the experiences that we've had, but we do have the ability to grow forward. So our our definition of authentic resilience is saying it's a critical life skill, and it's the powerful ability to be able to survive and thrive and grow in the face of stress, change, and adversity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not bouncing, but it is growing.
And it comes back to that what we started with at the beginning, the premise from which we depart about life, idea of life, that life is meant to be this rosy thing. And yes, from time to time, maybe you'll drop out, but you're meant to be on this level.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And if we divorce ourselves from that, then we wouldn't expect or ask of ourselves that we bounce back. Because
exactly.
That's also not, it speaks to the expectation that things are meant to just be perfect all
Correct.
The time and rosy. So let me go back to perfection. This was just a glitch in the system. Mm. No. Reflection. Let's go back to relentlessness, the relentlessness of change. I guess it speaks to that.
Yeah.
And you talk about grit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So relentlessness of change speaks exactly of that. If that one thing that we can be sure of in the world is that everything is going to change.
Yes.
You know, it is the Buddhist concept of embracing impermanence, of the fact that nothing is going to be remaining the same, but it runs through every major world religion. This too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about that, and that means the good things are going to pass,
mm-hmm.
as well as the bad things, which are going to pass.
Yeah.
Everything is in a state of constant flux and change, and we better get used to that. So the most resilient people are the ones who are adaptable, who are flexible. And yet, paradoxically, they're the ones also who have grit and determination. And they seem like they are completely against each other. And the truth is, you need both. You need to be gritty and determined, and also be flexible and adaptable.
That's exactly what went through my mind, because grit is about sticking to something.
Mm. Mm.
And you're saying that it's grit, and yet you have to be flexible
Absolutely.
And adaptable.
Yeah,
interesting.
And isn't that part of resilience is about the paradoxes?
Yeah.
It's complex.
Yeah.
And we have to constantly be holding those paradoxes.
And be comfortable in those contradictions.
Mm.
Absolutely interesting. Well, there are a few more other areas that we'd like to focus on, of course. And we've got some of your voice notes. We'll play that after the break. My guests this afternoon are the team from the Resilience Factory, Gabby Lowe, as well as Pippa Shaper. What goes through your mind when you think of resilience, and perhaps you're concerned about building it into your children? How do you make children more resilient? I'm hoping that we'll touch on that before the end of our conversation, because I think in present day it is absolutely vital. And part of me believes that struggle, it's important to not grow up too protected from strife, too protected from the hardships of life, because when you do encounter them, when they do happen, which they will, then you're like, what's this thing? I don't know what to do with this thing. We'll get to that after the break. But your thoughts on 011-883-0702.
702 Masterclass.
Azania and guests, hello. Josh here from Ramberg. This whole generational thing, resilience. Yeah, I don't buy it. I'm Gen X, I guess. I'm 42. So is it not just that as people get older, they look at the younger generation and then they say, oh, they're not resilient. I mean, think about the way our society has become more fast-paced and more selfish. I think it's less of a generational thing and a societal thing altogether. And I always try to stop myself from saying the younger generation X or the younger generation Y. Because I haven't walked in their shoes.
Thank you for that, Josh. How do you respond, ladies?
Well, I mean, I think his point is valid, and that first of all, there's no judgment in it. I think that the world is faster paced, that it is more challenging, and that there's an awful lot for youngsters to deal with. So there's absolutely no judgment. It's just to say that the research shows that they are a more vulnerable group. They seem to be slightly more pessimistic, slightly more experiencing a lot of stress for obviously a lot of different reasons.
I think suicide rates have also
suicide rates, anxiety levels,
a lot of concern,
depression, and certainly their research shows that there are more mental illnesses showing themselves. So I suppose what we're doing is we're not passing any judgment on that. What we are saying is that we can learn it. That's the fabulous thing about resilience, is you can learn it. Mm-hmm. So let's teach it. Mm-hmm. That's where we're coming from.
Right. So let's get on to one of the issues that I'd raised earlier on about raising children who are resilient. How do we go about that? Because when I think back to witnessing or seeing the struggles that we had in my family, you know, we just had to get on with it. We had to get on with it. Yeah, we finished the loaf of bread. We finished the frozen chicken in the fridge, and month end is not here yet. But you get on with it, you know, and it's not something that somebody stopped to say that, you know, this is how we're going to do it. Access this part of your heart, of yourself, of your mind, to help us reach there. So how do we do that? How do we raise our children to just simply be resilient?
One of the things we have to do is let our children fail, mm-hmm. which seems, you know, contrary to being a parent. That's the thing I don't want to do. I don't want to let my children fail. I want to protect them. And yet there's a certain amount of letting children naturally fail at stuff to be able to learn to pick yourself up and to learn to problem solve by yourself as well. And I think very often...
No, we're doing these school projects for them. What do you mean?
Problem solve for themselves. Yeah. So when we are stepping in, we're stepping into problem solve, we're stepping into to do the creative thinking for them and not allowing them. Hmm. You know, it's just, I mean, talking about sort of like a difference in a small thing. I don't know. I was brought up in the UK, and when I went to school, I had to go to school on the bus, and there were no cell phones. And so if there was a bus strike, I had to find my own way home.
Yeah.
You know, walk in the rain, do whatever. You had to make a plan. And I look at my own kids, you know, my youngest is 21.
We would be rushing. What, their fees must fall? Protest at your university? Nice. I'm coming to get you.
And actually, or get Uber or do whatever. And so you don't have to actually problem solve in some ways, because we've got all these conveniences that problem solve for us. Mm. So allowing ourselves to actually work stuff out for ourselves, fail, not step in for our children, is a very important part. And the best thing we can do for our children is to model resilience ourselves. And then that's how our children learn, mostly.
Yes. Yes. I also think it's about being able to bear it with them. Mm. So us as parents being able to bear their loss or disappointment is what builds. So when a child is weeping because they lost the swimming gala, to just allow them to have a sense of loss, to realize that weeping, that it's okay. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, they won't be overwhelmed by the emotion. We're so busy protecting them from emotion. We want to rush in there and rescue and make it okay. Mm-hmm. Actually, to have negative feelings is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And why do we call them negative? Mm. It's just disappointment.
Yeah.
You can survive it.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, you'll swim again. Mm-hmm. We rush in so quickly to stop those things that we can't sit with. But we need to learn to sit with them.
Mm. With them, as you say. And I suspect for a generation, those that will prove to be, I guess, more successful would be those that have experienced struggle growing up, that have had to struggle. Resources are limited. But if you know what it is not to have, how to fight to have that which you want, then chances are, you know, you will be built to be able to really run a more successful race, instead of, you know, just collapsing and saying, oh, but now what? Now what? Mm-hmm. Why is reflection important? And why is things like recalibrating important?
Reflection is, as you know, I know that you believe heavily in the breath work stuff as well. And that place of being able to be still, to be actually able to sit and reflect, you're not going to know your feelings unless you do that. Mm. To allow this reflection allows the space between a reaction and a response. So in every way, we're such a hurried generation. You know, everything is go, 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 go. And we're a generation of a life of doers, not of just, we're a human being, not a human doing. Mm-hmm. So to allow ourselves that space of reflection in meditation, in prayer, in retreat, in stillness, that finding that space for ourselves in which we can just be, to sit.
Interestingly, I think we have worked very hard to strip that out of public life. You know, we've worked very hard to remove any talk or anything near, any dare not say spiritual, you dare not say
anything like religion, what pray at school, you know. So we've that's just an example of but we've stripped society. We sort of said we're designing a world where things that deal with the heart, with the soul, with the spirit, whatever, however you define those, have no place, you know. And I think we will reap those, the impact of that. We will reap
and
that.
And I think that also it's really important that to be authentically resilient, you need to know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that if you don't sit still enough to hear yourself? Only when we sit completely still can we see our own reflection.
Right.
And we need to build that capacity to sit with discomfort and to sit with whatever comes up inside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But go through the emotions. So you're in Joburg now, but you'll be back in November for a public workshop, right?
Yes, we're holding one at the Da Vinci Hotel on Saturday the 9th of November.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full-day workshop, and we use a data projector, we use exercises that we do with people, we use tools of journaling. It's a full, very beautiful day. There's a lot of content to get through, but they've been highly successful in Cape Town, and so we're very delighted to have our first public workshop in Johannesburg.
Right. WhatsApp says, a friend gifted me a resilience workshop. It was the most surprising, moving, and thought-provoking experience of my life. Not a day goes by where I don't reflect back on what the remarkable ladies have taught me. I encourage everyone who can attend their workshop. These are life skills that should be taught at school. Great compliment. Mm. Another one says, the age of convenient everything has negated resilience. Convenient food, transport, access to media. Kids have to learn how to do things. Clean rooms, cook, help with chores, walk, and see. Be in nature and interact and learn from something other than Google. And interact and help animals and old people to learn compassion. Mm. Very interesting perspective there. We also have a voice note as we wrap up. Let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Aza. It's Bridget in Nigel. I just love this masterclass. It's so insightful. I've literally just pulled on the side of the road and I'm making notes in my diary. But I'll probably just download the podcast as well.
Oh, thank you for that, Bridget. Yes. So the resiliencefactory.com is the website. Gabby and Pippa, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be here.